Head Games Radio with Nick Lowry is leadership and performance psychology, both on and off the playing field. And there's no one better to bring it to you than Nick Lowry, who after being cut by 8 teams 11 times, became the most accurate kicker in NFL history. It's all about performance under pressure, in competition, and in life. And now, here's your host, Nick Lowry.
Welcome to Head Games Radio. This is Nick Lowry. So glad you could join us for a special performance, because today is a day when most head coaches are focused on the many men, young men that are looking to them for leadership. And Tony Dungy, the fact that you can make time for us on this day to kick off the season means so much to me. Thanks for joining us.
Well, Nick, it's exciting. I'm glad to be with you. As you say, we're kind of looking ahead to the 2006 season. And it's an exciting time for everyone, so it's wonderful being with you.
You gave me a lot of guff last time because you were like the 15th NFL head coach that we'd had on the show, so I figured I'd try to undo it this time and give you a head start on things, knowing how busy things are going to get. But first of all, let's just talk about the offseason for you, because obviously so much of what people say about you is about the way that you handle yourself, the way that you have a sense of grounding. But the offseason hopefully gave you time to get away from things and recharge your batteries. What did you do differently this year to get yourself ready after all you went through last year?
Well, not a whole lot differently. The only thing my wife and I did when we took our vacation time, we generally get about 5 weeks off between the end of our off-season workouts and the beginning of camp, and we just didn't schedule anything. We'd normally take a vacation and get away or take a trip, but what we did this summer was just kind of hang around and do things the kids wanted to do and just spend some family time. So that's the way I got recharged, and it really worked because I'm so excited about getting back to work and looking forward to going to training camp this weekend.
One thing we wanted to do today, Tony, was talk about your leadership in getting your team not only ready for the X's and O's, but in particular for yourself and for your team, the notion of emotion, that emotion can be the thing that gets in the way, whether you're playing in New England and you're Peyton Manning and it's bad weather and people are hitting you from all directions, or emotion can be the thing that takes you to the highest level. And in our next segment, we want to talk about that. As you look at yesterday, we want to put you in a different role, not as head coach, but we want to hear about what you have to say about Tiger Woods, and of course dealing with the loss of his father and what he did with that, about Mr. Landis, who won the Tour de France, coming back using emotion. We want to talk, of course, about Chris DeMarco, the notion of emotion, how you can harness it, how you help teach your players how to do that as well, with one of the great young coaches. I'm saying young, Tony. One of the great young coaches in the NFL, Tony Dungy. We'll be right back on Head Games Radio.
We know who's selling drugs in our community, but we never say anything to them. And if a white guy was to come into our community and sell drugs, we'd probably kill him.
Welcome back to Head Games Radio with our special guest today, kicking off the NFL season. We've had four NFL head coaches. Tony is our fourth. And I want to talk about emotion today. Here's a quote from our good friend Solomon Wilcots about one player that I'm sure you saw from time to time on the field, and the notion of how some players can use emotion and how some can't.
But I think it was just the way he got himself ready to play, and I think he was a guy that you, believe me, when the game occurred, you were glad he was on your team, and that was Greg Lloyd when I played with the Pittsburgh Steelers. You probably remember playing against Greg. Guy, you know, he used to wear a T-shirt in practice and under his pads saying, "Hey, you didn't hire me for my disposition," you know. And, I mean, it was the intimidating thing that he brought to the table, made him a phenomenal player, but he never did things that cost us games. And I think Pittsburgh has sort of always had that kind of individual on their defense, whether it was Mean Joe Green in the 70s, Greg Lloyd, and now a Joey Porter. It can work for you in football as long as you don't cross the line, and your ability to reason allows you to keep that passion and emotion in check.
So there's the head coach, Tony Dungy, whose team has the talent and has a leader in Peyton Manning that most people can only dream about having. Tony, let's change a little bit of the venue to get a perspective, your perspective on emotion. Hearing about Greg Lloyd, and of course you've heard about some of the crazy players like Romanowski and what they would do to get themselves ready and sometimes crossing the line. But let's take it back a step to yesterday and Tiger Woods feeling the pain, the loss of his father. He was thinking of that loss and whether he could continue without the man who did so much for him and established that sense of foundation for him. So his performance suffered greatly, and particularly in the U.S. Open. He took time off, came back, wasn't ready. And yet it seemed as if that was the way for him to get it out of his system. And the entire week this past week, if you followed, I know you play a little bit of golf, the entire week he seemed to have real poise. In particular, he said yesterday, Sunday, he had that sense of calm as well. What was going through your mind as you watched this incredible icon of golf find himself again with the help, perhaps, of his father and the perspective that he gained from that?
Well, I think that's part of what you learn in sports. Emotion is going to be part of your performance, and you have to learn how to channel that emotion the right way. You can't take it out of the game. You can't take it out of the situation. You have to use it, and I think players end up learning how to use it, and that's probably what Tiger is going through, learning how to use that emotion to make himself a better player and to make his game better, as opposed to letting the emotion hinder your performance.
Well, tell me about what you do, because, you know, you're such a technically calm team. You have a sense of calm on the sidelines most teams don't have, let's face it. What do you do to achieve that balance with, you know, the emotion that can get the players to sacrifice their bodies, to fly around the field? What have you learned over the last 4 or 5 years with this Indianapolis team to push those right buttons?
You have to have emotion and energy to win in the National Football League. So we know we're going to have that, but we work in practice on precision and performing under pressure. We put ourselves, our offense and our defense, in those situations where you're going to have your emotion flowing. We practice against each other, offense against defense, our first group against each other, and we put them in 2-minute situations where you've got to make decisions quickly and you want to win, and there's kind of a sense of pride riding on it, so that you do get that idea of how can I function best when I do have a lot of energy and emotion going.
Do you establish some of those frameworks, those goals at training camp? In other words, do you say this year, guys, we're going to take it to another level in terms of emotion? Is emotion actually one of the things that you try to bring into those what are normally quantifiable goals?
You know, Nick, I think the emotion comes, and you're going to have bigger games. Some games are bigger than others. When you play on Monday night, or you're playing the New England Patriots, or you're playing a big division game, you know that there's going to be a little bit more emotion than there generally is. So for us, it's not a matter of bringing it or saying we've got to get it to a higher level, but how can we control ourselves? How can we play our best, still be very, very fundamentally sound and technically sound when we have the emotion going? That's probably the biggest thing that separates playoff teams. It's not the fact that you take it to another level or do anything differently, but those teams that win in the playoffs are the teams that can function the same way and do all the things that they have to do when the emotion is running higher, and that's hard to do. That's not easy.
Well, and I would give as the example from yesterday, Sergio Garcia, you know, who's right there, and yet he fell apart in the first 9 holes there. Here he was letting his emotions get to him, realizing he's playing head-on-head with Tiger. He played so well, he tied the course record as well. As you look at Sergio and how often some players and some teams, I know I had to confront it as well, you think somehow you have to do something differently. That's what I hear you saying. In reality,
right,
it's about doing the things you've always done.
If you can do the things you always do in those pressurized situations, and I don't know that much about golf. I like to watch it as a fan. I felt going into it that Sergio would have been better being another stroke behind and playing in the group in front of Tiger. I thought Ernie Els probably was the best suited to play with Tiger. But that's what happens to a lot of guys. You said they actually had a note on the broadcast that his partners, playing partners in the last round are averaging a 70, almost a 71, and they're not playing the golf that they're capable of playing, whether it's, hey, the last round of a major, or because I'm in the group with Tiger Woods and I think he's going to play well, so I've got to play better. I think golf is the ultimate game of blocking out everything and playing against the course and trying to take everything else out of it, and that's what Tiger seems to do better than anyone playing right now.
This weekend, Tony Dungy, was one of the great weekends of the summer, and certainly for America, the way Landis came back in the Tour de France. You know, people, I think, haven't paid attention to the Tour de France because of Lance Armstrong and his absence. And yet Landis, here he was, literally by ESPN written off, that he had really flunked out of the Tour de France. He comes back in stage 17 from 8 minutes back in one of the most Herculean achievements, I think, in the history, most people have said, of the Tour. And you look at that. It's so interesting that he felt what he called humiliation and depression after that performance. And I'm trying to help you think of some of those situations, too, where you use that, you know, that performance where you just felt embarrassed and you turned it around and fueled yourselves, as he called it. He fueled his performance with rage over his poor performance, channel that emotion into another zone, comes back and wins.
Right, and what he had the energy and the determination from not playing well, but he still had the feeling that he could win. And that's what you have to keep going. I thought a great example of that was the Miami Heat and the Dallas Mavericks in the NBA playoffs. Miami's down 2-0 and almost goes down three games, but somehow wins that game. They end up winning four straight. They had the talent to win four straight, but had they lost that third game, I don't think they could have come back and won four straight then, because they wouldn't have think they could win. And so much of it is getting that energy and that emotion and that passion from a poor performance, but still believing that you can win. And when you have that, then you can have a performance like Landis, but it takes both elements.
And, Coach, another thing about you, we just got a couple minutes left in this first segment here, but I want to shift to a guy that you know, is another coach on the field, a guy that you've known almost from the beginning as well, to see his maturation, all the expectations, of course, that are on you, that are on him. Here's a little quote from somebody you might know about Peyton Manning.
Well, the first thing you look to is work ethic, work habits, preparation. Peyton Manning was off the charts in every one of those categories. The next thing you look for is production. Does a guy perform at a high level on a consistent basis? And then the final thing you look for is how a guy performs in clutch situations. And we've always, in our scouting process, as we narrow the process down and try to choose between one player or another, look exactly at that. How did the player do? Let's use Matt Leinart as an example. You know, how did he do against Notre Dame when the game was on the line, with on the road with 40 seconds to go? He won the game, and he did it. It wasn't Reggie Bush that did it. It wasn't Lendale White that did it. It was Matt Leinart that.
That is our friend Bill Polian, formerly with the Kansas City Chiefs from many years ago. And, of course, Tony Dungy was with the Chiefs. I was lucky enough to see his style, to see his poise and his class. And what we want to talk about, Tony, in this next segment with you, we're so lucky to have you on the show, is to talk about Peyton Manning, talk about the way that you build in leadership with people like, well, Reggie Wayne, Marvin Harrison, and how that seems to take over. Dick Vermeil talks about it all the time. It's not just the leader. It's also how everybody comes in to support him 100% of the time. We're talking with Tony Dungy on a special edition of Head Games Radio to kick off the NFL season. We'll be right back.
There's 95 guys or 97 doing the right thing the right way and two or three jerks. So two or three jerks get 97% of the attention.
Join Head Games Radio. Call 800-878-PLAY. That's 800-878-7529. And now, here's your host, Nick Lowry.
It's that time again. It's that time when the winners begin to separate themselves from the losers after all that work in the offseason. And a Tony Dungy has accomplished already so much. Some would say, hey, go ahead, retire. You've done it. You've won your 100th game. The Colts have won 22 of their last 25 regular season games. But, Tony, I know going through your mind, your heart, and your soul this offseason is, hey, we could win 13 in a row. It doesn't matter. We'd rather win it like Pittsburgh, where nobody thinks we can do it. We can come back and put it together at the end. And I want to talk about, you know, how you keep that balance between the players that are always quietly getting it done, the unremarkable, remarkable players of character like, well, like a Marvin Harrison in particular to me. That's the ultimate example of the silent leader, but also the guys that have that higher level of emotion that sometimes can get out of hand, how you harness that. Here's Dick Vermeil.
everybody makes a positive contribution to a player that's having problems. And I've been through it. And as a coach, it's tough to do it by yourself. You need reinforcement when you're not there. You need reinforcement in the locker room when you're in the office or in the personnel room or in a coaching staff meeting. You need reinforcement from everybody in the organization to back a common philosophy of how we deal with people and how we expect them to deal with us. And you're normally more successful when you include your other good leaders within your organization. That's all I'm saying.
Tony, I even notice it in the way people answer the phone at Indianapolis. There is a consistency in terms of just the way they seem to treat people there. How have you been able to engender that? Was that there when you got there? What are the things that you do that build in that seem that real consistency throughout the organization?
Well, I think Big Vermeil hit on it right there, that you have a tone that you want to set and establish, and then you've got to get everybody on the same page and everybody buying in and believing that. And it takes your veteran players and your leaders. It takes your other coaches on the staff. It takes everyone else in the organization. And I take that as a compliment, what you just said, that even our support staff and our people buy into it. But it's a process. It starts with the owner, and it starts with the general manager and head coach saying, this is what the Indianapolis Colts are going to be all about. This is how we're going to build our team to win. There's a lot of different ways you can win, but you've got to be on this page with us for us to be successful and then get people to buy into it.
What's the biggest message to this team this year coming off last year?
My message is there's going to be a lot of people that talk about the playoffs and that our reputation of this 2016 will be made in the playoffs. They assume we're going to get there, but that's not how you get there. As you know, you get to the playoffs by having a great off-season program, by having a great solid training camp, by getting off to a good start, playing the games one at a time, and winning enough regular season games to make the playoffs. And that's not easy to do. Even though people are going to look at it and say, well, that's a foregone conclusion. Indy's going to be in the playoffs. We can't approach it that way. We've got to look at it just the way we have the last 4 years, that we've got to work our way into it.
Well, Tony, let's get to the stuff that I think you might enjoy the most, which is just talking about your own players and comparing them with some of the interesting acquisitions, the sort of changing of personnel around the league. Well, I want to focus in particular on that wide receiver position, because your trio, Brandon Stokley, Reggie Wayne, and Marvin Harrison, they just get it done. They've got a quarterback that knows how to feed them as well. And you heard from years ago how Marvin and Peyton work together day in, day out in the offseason as well. So it's more even of a sort of intuitive, sort of like identical twins that know what the other is thinking. Tell us about those guys, and as you look at the changing universe, I'm going to take you through some of the other teams and ask you how you compare with them.
Well, I love our receiving core because it's, as you stated earlier, they're a hardworking group. They're a very productive group that really doesn't draw a lot of attention to themselves. And all three of the guys, Brandon, Reggie, and Marvin, all kind of work the same way, that, hey, we come out, we do our job, we take a lot of pride in how we catch the ball, how we get open, but we're not trying to bring attention to ourselves. And that's rare these days in wide receiver groups. It just seems like that position has really gravitated towards individuals. And our guys really work as a unit. They work well with their quarterback, and they have a lot of pride without being conceited.
Well, as I look at that position, it seems there has been some real significant change. As you look at the Redskins and our friend Al Saunders, and now having the checkbook open in Washington, so that Santana Moss no longer is alone, but he's got Brandon Lloyd and Antoine Randall. Tell us about what you look for the Redskins now with that sort of, you know, ability to spread the field.
Well, I think Al Saunders and Coach Gibbs look for the same thing. They look for explosive guys who can run after the catch, and that whole system is built to get guys the ball on the run and let them move with it. And I think they've gotten those types of players. Antoine Randall is a guy who's an impact player. Brandon Lloyd is a great hands guy who's going to catch the ball, and I think take advantage of the fact that Moss and Antoine are going to draw a lot of coverage. So I think they've got receivers that they like. It's a good system, and you know, two real great offensive minds there in Al Saunders and Joe Gibbs that are going to get those guys the ball where they can do something with it.
How would you pick the Redskins this year compared to last?
I think they're going to be more explosive on offense. They had a great defense last year. They relied on their defense and Clinton Portis running the ball. I think they said to themselves in the offseason, for us to take the next step, we've got to get explosive in the passing game. And that's what they wanted to do, and I think that's going to help them. Now, they're in a tough division. Dallas also got better at the receiver position with Terrell Owens, you know, if he can fit in. And history tells you that he will the first year. He'll go there with the idea of winning. And then the second year, it's more of how much attention I can get. But their receiving core is better. Philadelphia may be better by subtraction, where they don't have the distraction of Owens being there. But that's really a tough division, that NFC East. We open up with the Giants, and they added to their receiving core Santana's brother, Sonoris Moss, and along with Burris. And they've got Jeremy Shockey. So they've got all four of the teams in that league can throw the ball and make plays in that division.
And by subtraction as well, Pittsburgh lost Antoine Randall-El. They've got Cedric Wilson to help Hines Ward out. What's going to happen with Pittsburgh, do you think, this year?
You know, Pittsburgh, I think that's their mentality, that you know, they expect to lose players. They don't overpay for guys who are not the bell cow for them. And they know that's going to happen, so they're ready for it. And I think they're going to go into camp saying, hey, people are going to say we lost some guys, maybe we're not the favorites, but in their mind they are, and they're going to be tough to dethrone, and they're the champions until someone does knock them off.
Okay, well, we come to the question that everybody knows I've got to ask you, which is, and I'll put it to you sort of inversely, which is the Cardinals, of course, Larry Fitzgerald and Anquan Boldin, who I've had on this show a couple times, they were already doing well, even though everybody knew they were getting the ball, because the Cardinals couldn't run for a lick. Now they've added a guy named Edgerrin James. What's going to happen for the Cardinals now that Edge is going to give to them?
Edgerrin will help them a little bit. I think he brings to them mentally maybe even more so than what he brings physically. I think for the first time they've had someone come to Arizona who says, you know, hey, I'm a Pro Bowl player. I left a great team. I'm coming to Arizona because I believe you guys can win. And I think that was the important piece of the puzzle. He's going to help them run the ball a little bit better. He'll catch it out of the backfield. They also got another guy from our team that I think is going to help them even more, and that's Troy Walters. Troy was our fourth receiver, and he's there now, and he played for Denny Green in Minnesota. And Denny got him for one reason, because Troy is a consummate professional, and he is one of the hardest working guys I've ever been around. Anquan Boldin and Larry Fitzgerald are tremendous guys, but they are still learning the pro game and learning what it means to really be that great worker. And I think Troy is going to show those guys, much like he learned from Chris Carter. I think he's going to be that mentor to those guys. And I think they're going to be even better with Troy being there and with Edgerrin being there.
We're going to talk a little bit about the Pittsburgh Steelers and some of the things that happened off the field the last few years in our next segment, and get Tony's perspective on those and other things in terms of balance, which he, I think, is held in perhaps higher respect than almost any other coach in the league for that, the way he handles himself as well. But what is Edge, the loss of Edge, doing for you? I mean, you say that he's not going to add quite that much, perhaps, to the Cardinals as well. But what
was
he thinking?
No, I think it'll add a lot to them, and we've certainly lost a lot. But we have to kind of do it the same way Pittsburgh does, where you're going to lose players, and you have to have other guys ready to step up. Dominic Rhodes is looking to have a big year. In his mind, he's going to get a chance to show the world what he can do as a ball carrier. And we also drafted a guy, Joseph Addai, who played on the national championship team at LSU, and I think he's going to add something to us. So we'll have to do it maybe with a combination of players, but I think they can make up for the loss of Edgerrin.
Okay, last question for you in this segment, my friend, and thanks for letting me hit you with all these things. But to me, you know, the wide receiver position is so is executed none better than at Indianapolis, and that would be just your picks for this Super Bowl coming up this year. As you look at the teams, of course, you want Indy in there as well. Pittsburgh's going to be a factor. Who else do you think is going to be coming back for another run?
The AFC, I think, is really tough. You have a number of teams that have a chance to win in Cincinnati. I think got a taste of it last year and has a really, really talented team. Then you look out west, Herm Edwards, I think, is going to bring a defensive attitude to Kansas City. They're in a tough division, obviously. Denver played really, really well last year. But I think you've got about eight teams in the AFC that all could win it.
When we come back, we're going to talk to Tony Dungy about balance, about some of the things that seem to balance things out. You're doing so well on the field. Pittsburgh's lost 18 players, former players, in the last 6 years. That's 20% of all the players that have died in the NFL come from Pittsburgh. We're going to talk about how some teams seem to get snake bit, how you find balance in the midst of that great success on the field. And, of course, we've got to ask him about Ben Roethlisberger and what Tony Dungy would do to make sure his players don't make the same mistake. We'll be right back on the best new show on Sirius Satellite, Head Games Radio, in just a minute. Stay with us.
It takes the same thing to get to the Super Bowl and win that it takes to get there and lose. You know, it's not the NBA where you got a 7-game series once you get in that in the final. You got to get it done that day.
And now, back to Head Games Radio with Nick Lowry. Join the conversation now by calling 800-878-PLAY. That's 800-878-7529.
All I can say is you look at the cover of Sports Illustrated this week with Reggie Bush, and it's not the NFL season, it's the fantasy football season, and that says it all to me, because it is a fantasy world for so many of your players. They come in, so much attention, so much money, so many temptations on and off the field. And speaking of Dick Vermeil, here's something that our friend Dr. Stephen Solomon talked about in terms of that sense of balance.
The NFL coaches of our time is Dick Vermeil. You know, he was, when he was coaching the Philadelphia Eagles, and he retired because he was burned out. His life was so consumed with football. He was hardly sleeping. He was hardly seeing his family. And he took some time off, and he gained that perspective that, hey, my career is important, and football is important, and being able to win and bring a group of guys together to work towards a common goal is a wonderful, fulfilling experience, but it has to be embedded in a life that's balanced between personal and professional. And, he is a wonderful example of someone who learned that lesson and showed the rest of us that it can be done.
That's, of course, talking about Dick Vermeil. Now we talk about Ben Roethlisberger, who had to feel like Superman at age 23. He was able to accomplish, the way they have come back, the way he has handled himself for the most part as well. But that seems to be sort of the cautionary tale. As you think about Ben Roethlisberger and what he avoided, what he could have experienced, and, of course, our good friend, the very special, the tragic end to Derek Thomas, what do you do to use those stories to make sure your guys stay with a sense of perspective, Tony?
You do have to try to get that across to them, Nick. Most of these guys have succeeded at everything they've done. They have beaten the odds. They understand that they are special in that regard, and they do develop a sense of the feeling that they're indestructible. And you have to constantly try to get across to them that they're not, even while you're trying to build them up and make them feel like they are special. Because that's what it helps you win, that idea that, hey, we are good, we are tough, and you want to have that, but, hey, you're not indestructible. And that's something that, as professional athletes, we have to continually relearn that idea that we are not beyond the laws of nature and the laws of physics.
Tony, with the loss of your son, how much of that do you use to help make sure that those mistakes aren't made by your players?
You know, I hope that it's not different. For the message is not different, because that's what I've always tried to get across to my guys, that, hey, we are in this. We're wanting to win. The Super Bowl is the goal. But your family and your life, that's what's important. And you are going to have situations where you aren't going to have people with you forever. And so if you've gotten consumed by going to the Super Bowl and you miss the time with your family, you miss the time with your parents, you miss the time with your friends, it's not going to be worth it at the end. So hopefully they saw that and realized that, and it didn't take something like this to make that happen.
We're joined by Louis Zoka, who was the founder of West Point Center for Enhanced Performance and has studied the notion of performance, of course, literally life and death, preparing, as West Point has, 10,000 cadets for putting their lives on the line in Iraq and around the world as well. Lewis, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. I've really enjoyed listening to the two of you. I hope I can contribute something here.
Well, what I'm interested in is we started the show talking about emotion. And, you know, emotion, adrenaline, all those things can be, as we talked about also with Dr. John Elliott in his book Overachievement, emotion, adrenaline can be the things that take you to the highest level. But there are some steps that some people never get past in terms of being able to handle their nerves and their emotions. Tell us, as you listen to Tony and you look at what's happened this past weekend, what are some of the most important lessons about emotion and performance?
Well, it's interesting. First of all, it was kind of fortuitous that we had two major global events occurring, kind of being able to talk a little bit about that in this broadcast. Basically, the whole thing about emotion is that we talk about mind-body as being something that has to come together for peak performance. And what we don't realize is that the emotion is sort of the trigger or the bridge between the two of them. So when you have very positive emotion, the sort of the brain and the heart communicate very well, and you're, you know, literally talking about being in the zone. When that emotion is very negative, then it basically disrupts that that ability for the mind and body to work together, and there's just no way that you can perform. And we've seen that now both in the British Open and in the Landis occasion. The other thing that people don't realize is that emotion comes. The first trigger for emotion is how and what we think. And so after anything happens, the first thing that happens is we talk to ourselves. And if that conversation is negative, it's going to lead to negative emotion and the other way around too. And so the first thing that we can do to control our emotion, and Tony put it very well, to reach that balance, is you have to really bring under control how you react in your mind after something just happened, both positive or negative.
Here's the thing that, Tony, I want to ask you, which is the place of prayer, meditation itself. It seems as if you're able to maintain your emotions and perspective in the heat of the moment. And it seems that everybody has, if you're a place kicker, if you're a head coach, if you're the quarterback, whatever position, you've got to create that sense of sanctuary. And if you can do it inside your head when thousands of people are screaming obscenities of you, then you've really got something.
Well, you do, and that's the true test. When it's critical, when it is a pressurized situation, how you can handle it. For me, the fact that I am a Christian and I rely on that to really help keep me focused and calm, I think that's important. But I think it's also a practice. You can practice it. You can improve, and you can, as the doctor was saying, you can make conscious decisions of how you're going to handle things.
Okay, Tony, so let's talk about what you think is going to be your biggest challenge this year. Is there going to be a letdown this year? Are there some people that you're going to look to that have not been leaders in the past?
Well, we lost three players, Edrin James, Larry Triplett, who was the defensive lineman for us, and David Thornton, who was our defensive captain, as well as Troy Walters. So we lost four veteran guys who, in each in different ways, led us. And people are going to have to step into that leadership role, but I don't think we'll have a letdown. I think we still have a lot of players that are very hungry on our team that haven't reached their goal of being part of a Super Bowl, and I think we understand that it is hard work, it's tough duty, but it takes that commitment. I think we have that commitment, so I'm looking forward to it.
Coach, when you have those bulletin board comments from other teams, do you have a coach on the team that plays that role for you to get those players to that level of emotion? So, because if they've done their preparation to the week, which to me is what you do as well as anybody, you get your players to focus on preparation, film study, the actual focus during practice. But then it comes down to game time. Is there another coach as well that you look to for creating that sense of wreaking havoc and pillaging on the field?
No, I don't have a specific coach, and I think each of our position coaches know their players. That's the one thing about the NFL. When you're a position coach, you have eight or nine guys, and you're with them so much during the week. You get a good feel and a good read on them. You know what makes them tick, and that, to me, is critical. The head coach sets the tone, but those guys, they deal with their players and getting them ready to play the best that they can play. Some players you have to pump up, some players you have to tone down a little bit.
Okay, this is a different kind of question. We had Tim Brown, who, by the way, just celebrated his 40th birthday, and certainly a guy I think that would fit into the Tony Dungy mode of somebody that really understands how to perform without having to call attention to himself, always puts that team first. And he was put in a situation with regard to Marcus Allen during his career, which could have led to an amazing split with Al Davis. I wanted to hear for you to hear this comment from him about what happened with the Marcus Allen situation, because it still doesn't make sense to me. And what comment you would make in terms of making sure that never happens or would never happen in your career?
And I think that sort of got to Al, because when we would go places, they would say, Marcus Allen and the Raiders are coming. Now, he didn't mind when they said Bo Jackson and the Raiders were coming along, but when they said Marcus Allen and the Raiders were coming, because after Bo was hurt and done, Marcus was still there a couple years, and he was the face of the Raiders. And I think that was part of the issue that happened, and because it certainly wasn't anything that was happening on the field. Marcus wanted to play. They were not allowing him to play, you know, only on third down, third and long, and fourth and short was basically the only time he could play. And it was just ridiculous for a guy of his talent to be held back like that. It just wasn't right. And so when Marcus decided to go public, you know, the players had to make a decision. You know, who are you going to side with? And we knew the right thing to do was to side with Marcus, and that's what the majority of us did.
Have you ever heard of another situation like that, Tony?
Not really, and I remember watching that all unfold, and I don't know how it happened, but it just was really kind of tragic. You took a team, and I don't know that they've ever recovered from it. I think that was really the beginning of the downfall of the Raiders, and it comes down to what you're talking about, psychological situations where you're trying to get everybody on the same page and everybody focusing on the same goal, and whenever that gets divided, it's really, really hard to win.
Okay, now we've just got a couple minutes, Tony. I want to take you to where we see you going this year. You're 10-4. You got a couple games left. You got a shot not only at the playoffs but clinching home field advantage as well. What are you going to do differently this year? I know you're going to say we're going to try to do everything the same, but what are the little nuances that change the way that you get this team ready so they're ready and they're peaking at the playoffs, not just in November and early December?
Well, that's the big thing, and we really didn't have control over that last year. We got off to such a great start that we didn't have anyone chasing us. And so we came to the last four games, and they really didn't mean that much. And so you were trying to keep that mental sharpness, but still the players understood that we had everything wrapped up. So hopefully we can just get in a situation where we have to work and we have to keep that sharpness that we've, you know, we're not in that situation. It's very, very difficult. But if we did get to it, I think we probably would do things the same way that we did.
Well, I hope that we get a chance to go out to Royal Liverpool and play a round of golf after you've won the championship this time, Tony, because you certainly put the work in, you certainly deserve it, and everybody in America is praying for you, buddy.
Well, thank you, Nick, and it's always great being with you, and it's fun talking about these issues that a lot of people don't talk about. People talk about strategy and X's and O's, but so much to our game is mental, as you know, and it's kind of fun to go through it.
Well, bless you, my friend. Good luck in training camp, and hopefully we can check in with you in a couple months.
Likewise. Right. Good luck for me.
Thank you, sir.
Take care, Tony. Tony Dungy, you know, what an amazing human being. And, you know, to be successful, is it possible that another Tony Dungy can emerge? Is it possible that there are others that can carry themselves the way he does? Everybody has to find their own unique style and be true to that. Dick Vermeil certainly is unique. Marv Levy is unique. Herman Edwards is unique. We've heard all of them the last few weeks. And Tony Dungy maybe even takes the cake in that regard. When we come back, final thoughts about coaching, leadership, about emotion, and about how someone like a Tony Dungy can be a great example for how to be a leader and play even the most violent of sports with class, with distinction, with integrity, and with a championship mentality. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Games Radio. This has been a special show today to talk about not only on the field and the great wide receivers in the game, but also, of course, the challenge at such a personal level for Tony Dungy. As you look at this weekend, Dr. Zocca, and you look at the emotion and its role and how it played with Tiger Woods and with Chris DeMarco and Mr. Landis in the Tour de France, tell us what you think is the most important lesson.
I think the most important lesson is that emotion has a it's a dual-edged sword, can have a positive and negative effect, and the final trigger for controlling that emotion is what and how you think after an event and how you trigger that towards controlling it. So, and the other point is that Tony made very well is that this is not something that you can quickly just make happen for you. You have to work at this. Practice this just like you practice your physical skills.
It's like Alex Rodriguez, somebody who's one of the most mentally tough guys in sport, and yet even he, in New York, without any sense of sanctuary, you know, without any sense to escape, even he is suffering for it as well. Do you think there's any chance that Alex Rodriguez can find that sense of sanctuary and poise and regain his stature with the Yankees, or do you think it's time for him to leave?
No, I think he can. I think the problem usually is for players like Rodriguez to truly understand what is at work here, and then to find someone to work with who can help him regain that inner sanctuary, because inner sanctuary is really all about being totally able to control your mind, which of course then controls your emotion, and it's all about self-talk. And if you can't do that, if you allow the external world around you to interfere with that, it would be very difficult to recover.
Okay, so final question is self-talk. When all you can find in your mind is the sense that I've lost, I'm a loser, I'm in pain, I can't get it done, what's the one thing you've got to do, you've got to say to yourself to completely explode those negative thoughts and get yourself back in the right direction?
Well, the only way, if you have thoughts like that, the biggest thing you can do is to go back and visualize, literally visualize the best moments that you have had. Because when you do that, your brain gets into that kind of mode of, okay, I've been here before, I know I can do that. And once you get that feeling, then you can go back and start to self-talk and it will work.
Well, thank you, Lewis Zocca. We appreciate it so much. We want to thank Tony Dungy. Wish him and the Colts the best of luck in whatever team you root for.